welcome to Drive Through HR that had to be the longest intro ever. Sorry about that, guys. I am your host, Crystal Miller, and we have a first on Drive Through. I can't get the board to work, so we can't get to our guest, who's supposed to be Todd Raphael. Just in case, Todd, are you on the line?
I'm still on. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yay! Yes, I can hear you. Okay, that makes me happy. I'm very glad
Great.
You can join us.
Great to be here.
Fabulous. Todd, I know that in our little promo for the episode, we did share that you were the chief editor at our editor-in-chief at ERE, but why don't you do everyone a favor and give me some time to kind of collect myself? Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
No problem, and I'll briefly introduce ERE. Just in brief, we have four main parts of ERE. SourceCon, which is for sourcers, ERE for in-house recruiters, TLNT, which is for human resources folks, and Fordyce for third-party recruiters. And each of those, we have conferences and websites and webinars with each of those four brands, and we also have a few other things. A job board for recruiters. We have ERE Recruiting Excellence Awards for recruiting. So a variety of things broken out into different categories, sourcing, in-house, agency, recruiting, as well as human resources. And I do a little bit of everything for ERE, work on the conferences, the websites, and the awards, and a little bit of everything.
So it sounds like you are a jack of all trades and master of some. And I think one of the things that personally I find you to be really, really amazing with is looking at the different industries there, the different industry segments that you cover, and being able to connect some dots that sometimes that we in the trenches aren't able to see. And you had a pretty phenomenal take on the perceived skills gap. So do you want to kind of talk to people about your what you see, just straight off as far as is there a skills gap, and if you think there's not, what's the issue?
One of the things, if not the thing that fascinates me the most about this profession, about talent acquisition, about the labor market in general, is that most people I know, and I'm in my 40s, I can barely say that, it sounds so scary. So most people I know really, and I feel like I know smart, motivated, you know, good employee kind of people who would make good employees somewhere else. Most people I know, if not almost everyone I know, doesn't want to work for any of the companies you hear about as like the top companies and the Silicon Valley hot commodity kind of companies. Most people I know don't want to work for any of them. And most of those companies don't want anyone I know to work for them either. Why? Because those companies, from what I can tell, kind of want young people. I look at these career sites and all the marketing that goes along with them every day and look at what they're advertising. They essentially want people who want to socialize at work. You know, the ping pong and the foosball and everything else. And those are totally great things. I mean, I'm all for them, and I think work should be fine and not a chore. And so that's all good stuff. But most people I know are not attracted to what is being sold. They want to go to work and work really hard and do an amazing job, but then go home or do it from home. Forget the geography. They just want to work. And they don't really want to – they don't want all of these things that are being sold really to young people. I saw a site the other day that advertises a doctor at work. Most people I know who are my age don't want a doctor at work. They have a doctor by now, and they rather have, you know, they're getting tiny raises and, you know, pay freezes. They'd rather have the money. I've seen some sites that say they are company retreats. That's a benefit of working there. Well, most people I know, as you know, there are about 400 million vacation days that people in America aren't using. Most people I know don't have time for a company retreat. They feel stretched. They feel like they're working all the time. The employer's leashed with a smartphone. They're expected to be on call all the time and to spend another weekend at a company retreat. That's not what most people I know want. So I think there's a problem. You say skills shortage. Like, it seems to me that a lot of companies say they don't have enough people to fill their jobs, but they want a certain kind of person to fill their jobs, and it's just not a fit.
So when I listen to some of the stuff that you're talking about, and you're right, like, I don't need a doctor. I have a doctor. By the time that you're in your 30s, you've probably found someone that you see unless you're moving to a new geography. And that's my guess. No, just completely anecdotal evidence. But what I think what those things are really saying without saying them is you're going to spend a lot of time at work, right? So if you're going to spend a lot of time at work, let's make all of the R&D type stuff that would take you away from work easier by putting it on site. I really think that's what we have, things like dry cleaning and whatnot. Are you still there? Okay. I don't know if I'm actually on Blog Talk at this point or not, but let's see if we can get you back on. Todd, are you on?
I'm still on.
All right. When did you lose me?
30 seconds ago.
Well, to everybody listening, we're having a really fun day on Drive Through HR. Thanks for putting up with the technical difficulties. But I think what I think is that really we have all of these benefits like laundry on site and doctors and whatnot to kind of say you're going to spend a lot of time at work, right? So let's take the stuff that would take you away from work and put it on site. Don't you think? I mean, isn't that really what that's all about?
That's unfortunate because as you get older, what's valuable is your wisdom, your knowledge, your contacts, maybe like if you're a salesperson, that kind of thing. So it's not how many hours you put in. I think a smart company would say, Crystal, you're really smart and productive and creative between 1 and 6 in the morning. And you know what? That's when you should work, and we don't really care where you do it. And it's unfortunate if that's true of what you're saying. It's simply about the hours that you put in. I know a guy who is he's actually a CEO of a company. He worked super hard, and although he's the CEO of a company, he told me, he was over at my house a couple weeks ago, he said he'd love to have a job in aerospace. He happens to be, even though his company is a mobile-related technology company, he happens to be a pilot, and he loves aerospace. He said he'd love to have a job in aerospace. First of all, he said he doesn't think he could make it through an applicant tracking system because he's like the CEO of a different company. He's not quite... He has all the experience, actually. He's like a renaissance man. I mean, he would be amazing. But he just doesn't feel like he's not working for like a defense contractor right now, all that kind of stuff. He doesn't feel like he'd make it to the system. But pretending that he did, and I think that he should be able to, pretending that he could get a job and he got a job offer, he feels like he couldn't even take the job. Why? Because even though he works his tail off, he works all the time, he works super hard, if he gets this job, they'd make him commute to work an hour, hour and a half, God knows where it's going to be. He could no longer drive his kid to school in the morning and pick her up. He's got a first grader. His whole life and schedule would be kind of the way they want it to be. It would be about their kind of way of doing business. It wouldn't be about him doing the job. It would be about this sort of corporate structure they have. And he just feels like it wouldn't work, which I think is really unfortunate.
You know, it is unfortunate. I think that kind of gets into something that Kerry Corbett and I were discussing with the eHarmony folks yesterday, which was the younger generation coming up, you know, the Z kids, they're better at saying this is what we will do, this is what we won't do. I mean, they're pretty young. They're very entitled. And I don't know if that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing for them, but it's something I believe that we – might be lacking in Generation X. Like, it seems like the people that are in our age bracket, Todd, aren't pushing for what they want. They just assume they're not going to get it. Is that the fault of the employer for not offering it up front? Or should we, as, I guess, masters of our own careers, say, this is what we want and this is what we need and here's the value you'll get if you give it to us?
Although I cannot take too many more generational generalities. I get articles that seems like every day about millennials, and I try not to put them on ERE because they're just getting so old, millennial this, millennial that. So although I'm a little tired of the, like I said, generalizations, I do think this is one area. There are, I think, two or three areas where there is significant difference between people in different generations, although with plenty of exceptions. But and one of them is something that you're touching on. A lot of people who are, let's say, 50s and older, approximately, I'm totally generalizing, lived in a world where the woman was not working, and so the man had not that many childcare responsibilities. And they don't really get it now. And they don't get that nowadays women are often the breadwinner or one of the breadwinners, and that totally changes the role of men who have, in many cases, as many responsibilities for childcare as women. Going back to what you're saying, I know a lot of women who have left the workforce and would go back But the job, they see what's going on. They see people around them, and we're, like, on our smartphones 24/7, and we're trying to get a break, and the smartphone's going, and the emails are coming. And they're thinking, this is not the kind of lifestyle I can or want to go back to. I just can't do it. And if work was a little different, I don't think you would see as many people leaving the labor force. We all talk about these labor force numbers. You know, there's huge numbers of people have left the labor force. That's why, I mean, the job market has gotten better, but also unemployment is down because people aren't working. The people aren't counting themselves as wanting to work. And again, a lot of women I know who have kids are saying, you know, I would work, but I can't work like this. I want to work hard and do an amazing job, but not like the way I see people doing now.
So, I mean, but again, I think that goes back to whose fault is that? Is that something that the employer needs to step up and take responsibility for? Or is that really something as an employee or potential employee, we need to go to employers and say, you know, this doesn't make sense. Why are we doing this? Why are you asking for 18-hour workdays or whatever the case may be?
I think it's unfair to say that all these people who have 400 million unused vacation days are not taking those days because they're so motivated that none of them they're just pushing themselves so hard that they just don't want to take a vacation. I don't think that's fair. I think most people don't take their vacation days because they really can't. It's just too hard to work too much before and after vacation and to check the email on vacation and all that kind of stuff. I think that not taking their vacation days is actually, and this is totally the opposite of what I keep reading that people need to step up and take their vacation days. I don't agree. I think if it's too stressful to take a vacation, I get it. I understand why people aren't taking a vacation. Like, so I don't think it's people's fault. I do think they need some help from the employer, not to just say, hey, Crystal, you need a vacation. I think the employer, unfortunately, needs to do something. He needs to say, hey, how can we help you take a vacation? How, maybe we can get some backup, or maybe you know, a little bit of a temp, or maybe there's just, you know, maybe we can do a little job sharing or something during that time. Like, I think people need a little help from their employer and not just themselves. I don't mean to focus just on vacation days, by the way. I'm just trying to make a larger...
That's a really great thing, right? Because it's an interesting issue that people attack differently. I think previously it was just kind of expected that you come out of college and you're going to work for a couple of years, and you may not take a vacation for a year or two because you're establishing your career. I will say that the college recruiters that I talk to are saying that that's not the case anymore, and that kids are coming out of college expecting not just vacation days, but the same vacation days that their senior managers get because they're worth it, right? Whereas when I talk to people coming out of one company moving into another, and in my executive recruiter days, I know, again, anecdotally, the conversations that we were having was just, there's so much work, I'd like to take a vacation before I start because I know once I get going, I'm not really going to be able to take a vacation. It's unrealistic. And things like you said, it's just too hard. But
ultimately, I mean, we could talk the rest of our lives about vacation days and then we easily – you know, and I think for the most part, vacation days are passe. I mean, if it's true that work and life are together and they're melding together and your life is your work is your life, and all, because of technology and all this stuff, then ultimately there shouldn't be vacation days, right? You shouldn't have to work all weekend and say, can I take Monday off? But forgetting vacation days, because we could talk about it the rest of our lives, ultimately it should be about empowering. I can't believe I said empower. I hate that word, but empowering employees to do the work they can, the best they can, when they can, and it doesn't matter where they do it. Ultimately, it should be about, wow, there's this great person, Crystal, and she likes to work on her roof in her sweatsuit between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. I don't know why she does it, but wow, she does great stuff, and boy, let her do that. And yeah, she should drive into the office once a week and have her weekly meeting and blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, we want her to do, like, her best, and why would we, like, put her in this cubicle and, like, you know, like, because we think she's supposed to. Why should she conform to what does not make her the best employee?
So I think organizations, like people, get into ruts and they do things because that's how it's been done. And until someone can show a value proposition or some sort of reason to motivate the organizational leaders to look at things differently, they won't. But again, I think that's going to go back to the person that wants to do something different. to create that value proposition. Because just to say, hey, you should let me because I know I'm going to do good things, doesn't really make a lot of sense, right? Like, that's not really an argument. There's nothing that you can qualify or quantify out of that statement. So how do we better prepare and then, I guess, arm employees or candidates with the information that they need to be able to create that argument and to present that argument successfully?
Again, I don't think as much falls on the employee's shoulders as I think you do. I mean, I know people who work for very old school companies, and they have tried to make changes, and they'll try the rest of their lives, and they should keep trying. And I'm not saying they shouldn't throw in the towel, but they're not getting that far. I mean, you know, so I think ultimately it's what's going to happen. I think you alluded to it, is we're having a new generation of people coming up. And those people, I mean, I talked to a guy a couple of days ago, and he's a co-founder of some startup, and he's never met in person his other co-founder. And I think he's never met a few of the people he's hired. I'm sure they'll meet someday, but they never met in person. Kind of an extreme case, but I think the point is we have a new generation of people coming up, and they think differently, and they work differently, and they're you know, technology has changed everything and all that stuff. And so, you know, ultimately, I think it's not just about employees who are going to make the change. It's about, you know, new CEOs and company founders and the new generation. And ultimately, if an employee has to fill out a 10-page form and make a, you know, ROI case as to why they need to work from home one day of the week or something, ultimately, you know, employer probably has just, you know, they probably don't totally get it if that's what the employer has to do to, like, build a case to work from home as if
I agree
sort of
it.
Like, you know.
I agree, but I think that might be an overcomplication. But that said, let's put a pin in it for a second because we need to reset. If you're just now joining us, you're tuning in to Todd Raphael, Editor-in-Chief of ERE. And I, as we discussed, well, it sounds like a little bit more than just a skills gap and more like work-life balance and I guess, making a career that works for you on drive-through HR. So, Todd, I agree with you. Employers should look at things and say, what do we need to accomplish? How do we find the best and brightest? And what is the ideal working conditions for them? There's a scale issue associated with that, though, right? If you've got an employee workforce of 266,000 people, that's not really realistic. You can't do it. So do you just give up and say, okay, well, we're going to let this new generation of people coming up push this issue, and until then, what, is everyone else forgotten? I mean, because it doesn't sound like at that point we're really addressing the skills what's needed to be able to retain the skills in older generations.
A workforce of 200,000, I don't think has to be monolithic. I know a woman who works for a workforce of, I think it's maybe 50,000. And in that work, are you still there?
Yes, sir, I am.
In that workforce, I heard a beep. In that workforce of 50,000, every manager is different. And in her life and in her job, she drops off the kids, she shows up to work at 10 o'clock, she leaves at 4, and she picks up the kids. Now, she's not just working 6 hours because, as we all know, she works early in the morning because we all do this. She works early in the morning and she works late at night. That's her schedule, 10 to 4, early in the morning, late at night. And it works for her, and she's successful doing it, and she's in a huge company. But she has a manager who she said to the manager who was cool with it, and she showed that she does perfectly fine with it. And so, you know, I wouldn't say that just because an organization is big, they can't do this or that. Organizations are probably diverse enough that there's all kinds of different things going on within an organization, hopefully.
I think they can on a very limited scale, right? But to be able to say everyone can design their own workforce, I'm not going to say you can't pull it off because there's design their own working environment. Because there's companies that do it, really large companies that do it. But that's a huge organizational shift, right? So that's a big undertaking. So I would say that to your point of like the skills gap, if you were going to look at that and you're in an area or a company that has a perceived talent shortage, then maybe that's something that you need to look at. Rather than are there no skills, it's, you know, what can I do to attract some people who clearly have been there, done that? Because it's not like there's a position that we've invented that just has all new skills that no one's ever had before, right? I mean, pretty much.
Right. There's, I imagine there's artificial and non-artificial skills gaps. There's, if you're north of Grumman and you're trying to quickly find a lot of people with clearances, and you have to find, you know, Americans who don't, you can't just bring people in on a visa for, because north of Grumman is solely a military defense contractor. Then, yeah, I mean, it's tough to find people, and you gotta fight and scrap for these people. But if you're a company that's saying, you know, I know a guy who did not. He's 50 years old. He did not graduate from college, and he is so smart, and he has a job right now. But when he was looking for a job, he had a lot of trouble because he could not get through those applicant tracking systems because he didn't graduate from college. I mean, he could lie, I guess, but he shouldn't have to lie, and he shouldn't lie. And, you know, that to me is more of an artificial skill shortage because that guy, he's a smart guy.
I would agree with that. So where do we go from here? How do we improve this?
Well, I think that talking about it may sound like a waste of time, but I think the more that we talk about it and the more people listen, I think it's very valuable. And I think that a lot of what I see a lot of blog posts and conference sessions and people repeat the same things, and sometimes they just repeat things over and over, and they're not really true. And so I think to kind of present the other side is very valuable. Again, I've been to a million conferences the last few years, and I feel like every single conference I've been to, I've heard someone say, some recruiter or HR person say, how great it is that, you know, work and life are melding together and all that kind of stuff. I've said the same thing myself multiple times, so I know people have said it at every conference. And when I hear employees talking, people I know, like friends and stuff, no one else describes it that way. They're always with me, and they say, oh, my God, my phone's ringing again. So just to be cognizant of the fact that there's employees out there who don't see things the way that HR recruiters and employers do, I think is very valuable. Just to be more aware is very valuable. Just to understand that the employer's point of view is correct. And I've said it myself a million times. You know, it's great that work and life are melding together. I've said it myself. But again, there's another side to the story about how employees feel about things. And that's a valuable thing to be heard.
So I would agree with that. I agree with everything you're saying. God.
Oh, that makes for an interesting show. We'll have to start fighting.
I know, right? Like, I was just thinking it would be so much better if I could just take the opposing viewpoint, but I do agree with you. I do think that there's value to be learned in okay, so I will take an unpopular viewpoint. You said you're getting really tired of hearing all of the generational stuff. You are not alone. In fact, I would say 4 out of 5 people that we talked to have said the same thing. But don't you think there's a reason that we talk in generalities? If we're trying to look at macro trends, don't we need to look at macro type data, general data? I mean, isn't there value into this, or is like the generational stuff just completely made up crap?
I think there's generational differences where maybe 2/3 or, you know, 75% of people fit in, you know, and you, and so there are exceptions. I mean, like, look at, like, things like recycling. I think that most people I know who are younger are far more into the environment, whether they're conservative or liberal, they're far more concerned about the environment than people who are older, regardless of the people's political beliefs who are older. Acceptance of people who are, like, in same-sex relationships. I think people, regardless of their political views, tend to be just more comfortable if they're younger, just because it's more commonly accepted now. Those kinds of things, I think, are true. They're just true. They're just, I mean, 75, I don't know what the percentage is, but they just tend to be generalizations that I think ring true. But then when I read some of these, you know, blog posts about millennials, I do think some of those things are generalities, like, oh, millennials want flexibility, millennials want, you know, to make decisions. I think some of the things I read, some of the generalizations I read, I think don't really fit generations. They fit either just everyone, or they're more about being young rather than generation Y, if you know what I mean. There's generations, and there's just things that you want because you're young, and that's different than a generational difference.
That's fair. But I do see a difference between my brother and my daughters, right? So my brother's Generation Y, my daughter's a Generation Z. And the way that my brother approached the workforce when he was entering it, and even, you know, now, and the way that my kids look at what they should be expected to get, vastly different things, right? Like, my brother expected to be able to walk in and in 6 months be a manager. It's unrealistic, but you're right. I think that's just a byproduct being young and not knowing the workforce. My children expect to own businesses within 6 months of getting out of college. And I mean, that's just a totally different level, right? But that's, I do think that as we, as I don't know if it's a generational thing or just as we as a society continue to promote business growth and entrepreneurism, and I can't talk, and this whole concept of innovating outside of a corporation, you know, our children see that and they learn that as a workplace reality that I don't think we had, not to the degree that our kids do. So, I mean, that's a generational shift, right?
I hear you, and you hear of high school students who are starting nonprofit foundations and all this stuff. Yeah, I totally hear you. I do think, though, that when I think that, you know, you read things like, oh, I don't know, job security is less important to young people or something than, I don't know, older people, or just less important to millennials than baby boomers, or something. Well, when they get older, they might want job security. Maybe that will manifest itself in, you know, their own business or something. But some of these things, again, I think are
journalism, right? Like, journalism doesn't know the right words. Some of the people in journalism don't know the right words and so they use the wrong ones. I don't know if it's whoever's putting together these surveys, right? Like, I don't think it's a matter of it's more or less important. I think it's a matter of just it's less expected because it's just not there. I mean, we do just completely employ people differently than we did in the 50s. There is no company man, not really, not anymore. So, you know, I don't think our children expect that, but I think job security is important to everyone. I mean, I don't know anyone that's not been shaken when the boss walks in and lays everyone off, or just them, right? Like, we all need to make money, so if the source of income goes away, that's going to matter regardless of how old or young you are. Anyway.
Right, absolutely.
So we got a couple of minutes left. Where are you going to be? I think ERE is coming up next month, correct?
Yeah, it's coming up at the end of next month, and it's in San Diego. It's ERERecruitingconference.com. And then we have our conference in the fall. The end of October is in Atlanta this year. We rotated to different cities.
Very cool. So I'm assuming if people wanted to see you, they could snag a ticket to ERE and meet you in person, yes?
That'd be great. Again, it's ERERecruitingconference.com. It's this particular conference we put on, I mentioned we have different brands, but this particular conference is mostly for in-house recruiting leaders as opposed to someone who works for an agency or who's more of a sourcer or an HR generalist.
So obviously if people wanted to find you online, they can find you at ERE.net, but where else is a good place to connect with you? Are you a Twitter guy, a LinkedIn person? What's your social stance?
Absolutely either. They can find me on LinkedIn or Twitter. Certainly with Twitter, as you know, you have 4 gazillion followers and you're not really sure necessarily who they are, what they've been saying, or if they know what you're saying. And so I don't know that Twitter is necessarily the best place to have a conversation, but LinkedIn may be a little better.
Fair. Very, very fair. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up for today. Thank you so much for joining us.
You too.
If you are going to tune in tomorrow, you will hear the folks from eHarmony, Steve Carter and Dan Erickson, coming in to talk about culture marketing and what that really means and finding the right fit. So thank you very much, everybody. Have a great day.